It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey everyone, Rick here from Fueled by the Outdoors, and I'm here to talk to you about the Mobile Hunters Expo. It is coming up quickly, and you're not going to want to miss it. Come see what the show is all about on June 23rd and 24th at the Chattanooga Convention Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Come try and test all things mobile hunting. I'm talking stands, sticks, platforms, saddles, e-bikes, archery equipment, you name it, we got it. I personally can't wait to start looking at some new stands and sticks. I'm looking to replace some of my old stuff, and I know there's going to be great equipment there from some of those vendors. Our goal is to put on the whitetail event of the summer to help you become the most efficient hunter in this upcoming season. Tickets are on sale now at themobilehuntersexpo.com. And you know what? If you can't make the first show, then come out to the Northern Show at the Kalamazoo County Expo Center Kalamazoo, Michigan, on July 28th and 29th. I can't wait to see you there. Hey everybody, Rick here from Fueled by the Outdoors, and I'm here to tell you about a wonderful company, Satties, Custom Ammunition and Gunworks. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads lately. I've been using the Satties Fatties turkey loads, and I got to tell you, they stop a bird dead. Chris used a 20 gauge this year. I used a 12. Josh used a 20. And my son actually killed one with a 410 this year with one of the Satties loads. And my God, do they put the birds down like crazy. Aaron Satterfield and his family have a wide-ranging array of ammunition, custom game loads, predator loads, turkey loads, the Satties Fatty, and also they do gun work. Please get a hold of them with any questions that you have in terms of your custom ammunition needs. Go to SattiesLLC.com. That's SattiesLLC.com and tell them that Rick from Fueled by the Outdoors sent you.
Curved buck down, baby. Oh my gosh, that was freaking awesome.
This is my first public land buck. This is my second sit of the season.
I can't believe. Oh my gosh, I just heard him fall.
I just shot my Kentucky buck.
Welcome to Fueled by the Outdoors. We're your hosts, Rick Cates, Chris Leppert, and Josh Luck. I almost said Rick Cates because on your camera, it says Rick Cates. So I almost said my name twice.
What's up, guys?
Oh, my goodness. So, everyone, we have a bit of news to cover before we get launched into anything this evening.
Yep.
Big news, monumental news, huge news.
It's going to be huge.
Huge. we have joined a podcast network, not just any podcast network, the Outdoor Recreation Network. So there's, we were invited by a group of guys, I believe the Southern Outdoorsmen. And are on the network. And what is Nick's podcast?
Gundog It Yourself.
Gundog It Yourself. We had discussions. We are all pretty like-minded individuals with hunting and conservation. And we felt like it was a really good fit for us to grow the podcast and for you guys to get out there and listen to some new stuff as well. And to, you know, expose the masses to three guys in the Midwest who like to go hunting.
Heck yeah. Oh yeah. Well, gentlemen, before we see any more, raise them up.
Prost. Cheers. Prost. So.
Yeah. So with joining a network, the whole purpose is to help grow the podcast. You guys might hear some more ads on the podcast. You'll still hear some of the same stuff that we do. Like Rick has the ads running on our podcast now, but you may hear some more of those span ads that you hear on other podcasts. It just helps us bring in some revenue, which will help grow the podcast, allow us to bring more content and improve the quality as we go forward. So it's all good things all around.
It'll help us buy volume control for Josh's voice so you can hear him appropriately.
Yeah.
Maybe some internet that's not paid for by a damn EBT card.
You leave my internet.
Hey, Josh is going to be moving a lot quicker than what he initially thought. So he's going to be having that nice cornfield internet here before too terribly long.
That's right. Literally right after the expo, I have to move.
I don't envy you one bit.
No, you think so? These builders, COVID has them so scared to give dates now. So they're giving dates way out in advance. And anytime you bring up a date, they tiptoe around it and they act like it's top secret. Literally, our builder's like, don't tell anyone I told you this, but this is what the date looks like for move-in. I'm like, come on. It was literally, it's been pushed up like 4 months. So 4 months sooner than what we thought we were going to have to move, which is good. But we are also, there's 4 months less of pay.
In theory, it's good. But
in theory, yeah.
But in practice, it's, oh, hey, we're going to, you know, you're going to be able to move in at the end of July, start of August now, which then means that you are now invading and scouting time even more versus trying to move over a weekend that you might not have deer hunted at.
Gross.
You have a younger child now versus, you know, even 3 or 4 months farther on down the road. That actually may be of your benefit because he can't move as much. He's starting to move, but he's not going to be moving as if he got his feet underneath of him and he took off down the hallway.
Yeah, as long as I don't have him in his new little walker thing, he's basically running with that thing now.
I'd keep him in that thing all the time. Josh came over today, we put some blankets down, and he just sat Theo, and Theo like sat there like a grown-ass man and watched TV on the floor. my kids would have fell over 400 times, hit their heads, screaming, yelling at me. Theo's just sitting there, kind of gabbing here and there to himself and watching whatever the hell that lady's name was. What is it? Miss Jessica or something?
Miss Rachel.
Miss Rachel. Yeah.
Yeah. I literally think his little belly sticks out and I think he just like uses
it's like the a kickstand.
Yeah. It's like a kickstand.
Like a counterweight.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you got that. You got right after the expo and moving forward with that. That's going to be tough.
Will be a lot.
We'll make it work. I was just counting on having 4 months of extra pay to help, you know, buy appliances and stuff before we moved. So that'll be fun to figure out.
Maybe we
goodness
can.
Gracious.
Well, never mind. I probably should wait till like the second or third podcast, kind of like a date where we're in this new network before I start bringing my full self out.
Probably a good idea.
I'll kind of kiss on the neck a little bit and then leave it at that.
Oh, also, we forgot to mention, I think we're going to trial a new release day during the week,
yes.
Correct?
Yes. Yeah. So as you're listening to this, you'll notice, like, you probably got this dropped in your downloads a different day. We are going to start releasing on Fridays, mainly because we can, but two, because it allows for, we're getting into hunting season, we're getting into scouting season. We all know that at some level, you either like listening to podcasts on your way to scouting or music, and depending upon how long your drive is, a podcast can be one of the better things. So spread the wonderful news. We are going to be releasing on Fridays. And if things suck with it, guess what? We'll move it back to Mondays, and you'll have everything back to normalcy, and it shouldn't cause any issues whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh yeah.
So we're excited though. This is a really cool thing. We're on with a lot of good podcasts, and this is no different than any other any other podcast you listen to in the outdoor space is probably on some kind of network. At this moment, whether it's Meat Eater's a network, there's like a couple other ones that are out there, but yeah. So enough about business. Yeah. On to other things. Mainly, we are less than a month away from the Mobile Hunters Expo in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And if you haven't bought your tickets, I don't know why you need to now, because it is going to be a very, very healthy event to be at. Yeah. I'm pumped.
Or gal. If you're a Southern guy or gal that likes to hunt deer, you are going to be stoked when you come to the show. We have Michael Perry, Daniel Lemon, and Jeremy Aaron from the Do-It-Yourself Hunter on YouTube. Michael Perry, I think he has like some state records in Alabama. Then we have Hunter Hogan and Joshua Trollinger talking archery. And then who is our other person for the South? We have, who am I leaving out?
Did you say Jonathan Moreland?
Jonathan Moreland.
John. Oh, my God. Jonathan Moreland. Yeah. I should have named him first.
I literally watched it. I watched his video this morning.
Right before a workout.
it was amazing. It's so good.
You hadn't seen it before?
No, I've seen it before. It's just so good.
Yeah, it's good.
He goes out and gets it done with a stick bow.
Yeah. So y'all are going to really like this. This show is tailored specifically for you guys. We didn't want to have a bunch of guys with 200-inch deer from Iowa and Ohio and Illinois and all that. Not that there's anything wrong with those. We love big deer no matter what state they come out of, right? But if you're in the South, you generally have a different situation, and we wanted to cater to that and tailor it specifically to your needs and what you're going through down there in that hot ass humid place you live in. So we really think that you should come give it a try. You'll be able to try almost any mobile hunting gear and then purchase it on the spot. That includes lock-ons, sticks, steps, stands, saddles, platforms, you name it. And then there'll be all kinds of other stuff there as well.
There's all kinds of other gear stuff too. Yeah. Like just all kinds of other great, great gear that you're going to be able to look at and purchase as well.
Archery.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there's archery equipment there.
Yeah.
Different archery companies, whole bunch of stuff.
Going to have some e-bikes there for you to play with.
Yeah. Bike testing area.
Yeah. Going to be a pretty slick event. And I think it's going to end up being the sort of premier whitetail event in the country. There's nothing out there that's even close to it. And we're really excited to bring this to you guys. So it's coming up. You can get your tickets at themobilehuntersexpo.com. They are $2 off online. They're $18. It'll be $20 at the door. And then there's all kinds of different codes that can save you money as well. If you figure those out, we're not going to give those to you because we don't want to skew things. But if you listen to other podcasts and stuff, you'll be able to get even more money off. So,
yeah. And when you come, Come say hi to us. We love to meet each and every one of you that listens to the podcast, talk to you, you BS about deer, turkey, you know, what gear, doesn't matter. We'd love to sit down and you know, talk with you. And certainly there's a social after Friday night where we'd love to, you know, have a beverage or two with you and, you know, discuss how you hunt in the South and how we hunt everywhere else too.
Absolutely. So with that being said, let's roll into what we freaking love the hell out of.
Turkey hunting.
Well, we had to say goodbye to that.
We closed the book.
Our Southern friends, they said goodbye like a month ago, but and then came up to Indiana and hung out with me on a Tuesday night, I'm pretty sure. There's everybody from Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, you name it. They were all over there.
So Tennessee, I just learned this today. Tennessee was open until May 29th.
Yeah.
That's insane.
I saw one there the other day, and I was like,
insane.
How are you still hunting in Tennessee?
So they took those days, those weeks from the start of the season, and they reversed and they tacked it back on to the end. And so you can hunt turkeys for like a month and a half. It's silly. Like it's, you know, it's almost the same amount of time. Like you can hunt out like in the Pacific Northwest or something like that. But
that's long turkey season.
Long turkey season. It must be lovely. At the same time, though, I'm ready to turn the page on it.
Yeah, it's that time.
Yeah.
I'm getting velvet picks, and it's getting me excited.
I feel dirty saying that I'm ready for deer season. I've never said, like, let's end turkey season and get to the deer before. It's normally the other way. I'm normally yelping and hooting and crow calling and November and December, like, all right, come on, turkeys. And now I'm like,
yeah, but to be fair, like, you had a really good season. The bloodlust must have been satiated at some level.
Bloodlust. That's awesome. I did have a good season. It was a great time. That's one I'll remember for a while. And what, you know, what's really cool is it almost kind of started and ended with Josh. And I had like a cool little moment with both of you. Mm-hmm. Most of those moments with you were me missing and you being successful. But hey, I'll take that. If we all got to kill birds, I'm fine with that. But
yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely ready for deer season. I took a few weeks off of e-scouting and deer scouting in general, which was kind of weird, but kind of good in the same sense, because I'll bet from January to April, I was probably on my phone bare minimum 3 hours a day. And that's on the very low end, e-scouting different states that I'm going to hunt. Now, keep in mind, I'm not like sitting at my table e-scouting, right? Like when I am sitting, you know, in bed at night or what, like I'll stay up for 2 hours at night or longer and e-scout when I finally get the kids down or whatever. I'll take a half hour, whatever, and I'll e-scout and then step away from it, get some stuff done, and then come back and e-scout. So it was nice to take a break, and then we went into turkey season, and I kind of actually forgot about it. And then one day I was like, oh, I should probably get back to e-scouting. And what I mean by that is I'm basically studying these maps, looking for places in one of the six states that I'm going to hunt this year. Well, technically possibly seven, but things are going to have to really go really good for that to happen, because that last state would be pretty far away. But, you know, e-scouting certain places like Missouri and Illinois that are so far away, even Indiana, they just set up completely different from Ohio and the region of Kentucky that I hunt. And so it's nice to get back to that. We're starting to drive around in the evenings. We drove around the night and looking for deer, and just, you know, you see one that might be popping a little better than the rest, and just kind of gives you an idea. And starting to hang some cams again and everything. So it's pretty fun.
So do we want to talk about kind of what we do now to give the listeners some deer season stuff now? So to kind of talk about what we're doing now to prep for the season, I guess specifically early season, what we're doing now to put us in an efficient position, I would say. So most of us, I think all of us are actually e-scouting and like hanging cams or getting ready to hang cams for the most.
Yep.
So going back to what you said, Chris, as far as e-scouting, I hopped on Spartan Forge the other day and did a little bit in Indiana. I don't know if I'll get to hunt Indiana this year, but I was just kind of practicing and looking at new areas. So when you're looking at new areas, Chris, what are you looking for? Now, are you thinking of time of year in which you'll be hunting? Are you looking at wind-based bedding for that time? Kind of break that down a little bit.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously everything we say, you could probably hear on like 10 other podcasts, right? But I think certain people put it a certain way. And then I will say that I feel like for the most part, there are very few podcasts you can listen to where the people that are on the podcast are actually killing deer. They're more asking questions, right? And some of them are really good at it. But I've physically seen what I'm about to say work right in front of my eyes multiple times. So it's not just something that I've heard somewhere and I'm spewing, you know, somebody else's words. I'm just going to try to put it as best I can and let you know that I can attest to the fact that it works. So first things first, Josh and I are early season hunters. We love early season. It is our belief that you can target mature bucks early, despite what a lot of people think, and you can be insanely efficient at killing these deer. And we're flat out freaking obsessed with hunting. So we want to kill and then move to another state. And not because, you know, we want to post pics and get likes or our jobs depend on it. We just love killing deer, killing turkeys, whatever. So when we're looking, when I'm looking on a map, number one, I'm looking at wind-based bedding, and I'm, you know, while I'm setting myself up for a westerly or southerly wind for that early season, I also want to have options for a northerly or even an easterly wind. So we're looking at all these different hubs. We're marking the ones that look basically the best, or, you know, the best doesn't necessarily mean how that hub sets up either. Sometimes overlooked is way better than the one that looks great. It's the one that looks great might be, you know, pounded.
Hammered.
Are you about trying to say something?
I am. So I think I missed what you said. Did you say a northerly or an easterly based wind?
He said it like potentially a northerly or easterly based wind just in case.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not gonna have a northern.
Yeah.
Okay. 9 times out of 10, your wind is not gonna be out of the north or the east.
I must have been looking at my phone because I caught the end of that. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Every once in a while, though, here
you get wind shifts, and it is important to have a backup plan.
You'll get a freaking cool down, and you're gonna have a northerly wind. And then what do you do when all your stuff is southwest? West, west, southwest, you're screwed. So you want to have a backup plan and be able to at least hunt that first sit on opening day, right? So,
I mean, I can attest to that, like just not necessarily from a hunting perspective, but definitely from a fishing perspective at a bare minimum. There's been times I've fished tournaments on lakes in September, like first and second weekend, and you get some freak wind that comes in out of the north or the east, and it completely just tanks the fishing on a lake. And then you've got, like, you have to think of how you're going to do things completely different and get out of the wind because you weren't expecting it. So, you know, having that extra little bit of a plan for that contingency is super helpful, because as we've talked about plenty of times in here before, a wind shift and a big deer moving are like two hands grasping each other at points.
Yeah.
Shane Parker.
Yeah.
Made a post about this recently online of some of his trail cam data showing the mature buck, and he was defining mature buck as 3.5 or older. Looking at daylight movement of mature bucks during those fronts, the frontal passages, and the wind shifts associated with them. It's pretty neat.
So I'm looking for wind-based bedding. I want all kinds of hubs that set up for each wind that allows me to access them to hunt. So those hubs, if I can get some diversity in there, that's really good. Obviously, you know, a clear cut or meadow, or, you know, just a really high stem count that adds cover and, you know, just a lot of diversity. When you, for whatever reason, man, when you have a lot of diversity, deer just seem to thrive and get bigger. It seems like those areas almost cater to being little mini, like, oasis. So
I don't know what the
plural is. The
plural of would be
oasis. Seems kind of weird, but so I'm looking for diversity. I'm looking for wind-based bedding that gives me an option for any wind, and I want something that's basically tough to access, so that people aren't going to
stay the hell away from it.
Yeah. Stay the hell away. And you know what, if they go there in November, 'cause it's a dude who's hardcore from Mississippi or something, and he's chasing his dream, great. Bravo. Go kill every deer you find. That's fine. Give me the first couple days. That's all I want. And then the other thing I'm looking for, which I can't look for on a map, this is kind of where the boots on the ground thing comes into play. We're looking for those hub scrapes, and we're literally trying to mark all the sign and food, the oaks that you can look at and say, if this year is that oak's year to be dropping pretty good, that is definitely a 10-day food source for the deer during this time. Like, this is where he's going to go.
So That brings up a good point, and this is kind of like a point of knowledge for people. And I don't think I'm giving anything away here, because it's pretty easily accessible. If you go on your DNR, your state's DNR, and go on, every state puts out a mast report, and you can find, like, if you have an oak, or, you know, specifically red oaks that, you know, didn't drop well last year, they do a mast report in different parts of every state. So you can get a good idea if you're going to have a good, like, if that's going to be a decent enough food source for you to, nice, to go after something. Yeah. It's a pretty good thing. Most state DNRs have that on there. They do a hard mast and a soft mast, which is very important, because there's, you know, if you're hunting early season, you know, you're looking for something completely different than you are late season.
Yeah.
That's a good tip and a good tool, especially I feel like if you're hunting somewhere like Indiana, where their openers literally kind of right around that transition period of where they're probably going to start hitting more, like, get off the fields and hit more, you know, oaks and stuff like that. That'd be a good tool. Just to go back, Chris, did you specify the terrain in which you're e-scouting for?
Yeah, so I'm sorry, I didn't. I'm looking at hill country. I want preferably the sort of nastier terrain, if you will, the steeper terrain that discourages deer hunters. Turkey hunters, it does not discourage them, we found. they will go anywhere because they're not carrying a stand or saddle setup and bow, and then thinking about how the hell they're going to get a deer out. So they just got to carry a turkey and a gun. But I'm looking at hill country, man. I like hunting the flatland too, but to me, hill country, the way it sets up, it just allows us to be efficient and narrow things down. And before I go any further, I'm all about paying homage. A lot of this stuff I've picked up from a gentleman by the name of Jake Bush. He also runs a podcast. It's called In Session, and I think you guys should check that out at some point. He's a wealth of knowledge. We've been fortunate enough to learn from this guy. So just want to throw that out there that, I don't feel like it would be right for me to learn everything I have from that guy and then spin it off as like, you know,
yeah,
I'm some kind of badass who did it all on my own. I had help, and I've been blessed by God to have got to scout with that guy multiple times. So anyway, I'm looking for steep terrain, hill country, where those bucks are going to basically bed, probably somewhere around that top third. And they're going to be wind to back, meaning when they bed down, they're going to have that hillside to their back with the wind rolling over it. And then they'll smell the thermals coming up. They've got a sight advantage. And that's kind of, you know, and this is something I definitely picked up off Jake. The bucks kind of get cocky because they can see far, you know, from, you know, October into November, December, January, February, March, April. Then all of a sudden stuff starts to grow up, and it's almost like they've got it dialed so well that they get a little cocky. And I'm starting to see it myself. The look on their face is priceless. When you stop the deer right before you release your arrow, they can't believe that somebody got in on them, basically. So those deer also, and a lot of people don't agree with this, but I've just seen it too much, and Jake and other guys see it too much. They're coming down wind to back. So after the thermal pull, the thermal switch, when those thermals start dropping, those bucks will actually walk downhill with the wind, the thermals blowing over their back, because they've sat there and watched out in front of them, down below them for so long. So they feel comfortable. And when you've slipped in there just beyond that sort of like sight barrier, you're right on the edge of it, which is, you know, another thing that takes a lot of good planning, scouting, et cetera, and then a really good job getting in there and executing. But you have a full wind advantage on those deer at that point, unless they do something completely off the wall, which, I mean, it can happen, but early season, they are pretty freaking patternable. They do the same thing over and over and over. So that's what we're looking for. We're hanging cams on these scrapes, and in between the scrapes and the beds, we're locating the beds. Which is another thing we're looking
buck beds.
For. Yeah,
buck beds. That's an important thing, because it's great to locate doe beds if you're hunting for November. Wonderful thing to do. If you plan on hunting the rut, if you're planning on hunting mature deer in September, October, you need to be targeting buck beds now in order to make sure that you can get in there on these deer earlier in the season, where they get all weird.
This guy, I'm talking about buck beds and such. I like it.
Look for all the balloons.
Yeah. Gotta get them weather balloons. Hey, those are a thing. I don't care what anybody says.
So Josh and I were at a property, and I swear to God, we were walking out. We went and hung cams, and we were kind of turkey scouting it. It was where you shot your deer last year.
Yeah.
And on that same level line, you had found a bed. And when we're walking back to my truck, you go, "Oh, here's a balloon." And it's like same level line. It was still 40 yards away from where you found the bed at. But I mean, I don't know. Like it seems overly consistent. Unless you find him in the middle of the water or something.
I forget what it was. It like a birthday balloon or something?
Mylar balloon.
Yeah.
It's a Mylar. Wow.
Mylar. Yeah. It's a fancy way of saying birthday trash.
I think a couple things to note on what Chris said. So like you said, looking for those early season beds where the predominant wind is usually a southerly based wind. You get a lot of west too, so westerly winds. But in those areas in that hilly terrain, when they're coming in the back, they're able to see everything down in front. So they feel confident going down wind back down in those areas. And they usually have a destination where they're going to. So usually if they're going down, they kind of have to go wind back to their destination, whether that be an ag field or some other food source. So I think that's also important to note. Just piggybacking off of the e-scouting and kind of planning in your head. So Chris, when would you, are these evening hunts that you're looking for? Are they morning hunts?
Well, I don't want to get unfriended by my buddy Josh here, but
do you want me to tell you when I would hunt those spots we're talking about?
I'd
only hunt them in the evening.
Yeah.
Josh
has a different situation in certain spots, and he's making good plays. I'm just poking fun. But for the most part.
I'll let you finish, and then I'll tell you about the spot I e-scouted in Indiana the other day.
Okay.
That I think was for morning.
Oh, all right.
Same terrain, but I'll tell you why it's different.
Okay. I'm intrigued now. So essentially, I'm looking at evening only for these spots. Morning, you're going to play hell. I'm not saying you can't do it, but I'm not good enough to do it. Let's just leave it at that. It's very difficult to get in on a buck's bed and, you know, beat him in there and then not get J-hooked by him. So I'm looking at evening. But I'm getting in early. I'm taking what I do last year. I think I got in there at like 1 o'clock, man. Like it was fairly early. And that's after like, you know, a kayak ride and the whole nine. So there, you know, pretty good drive, the whole nine. So basically I'm taking hours to access a spot, pop milkweed and make sure everything's the way I want it. And then I'm taking very long to go a couple sticks high in a tree and set everything up, because where I am, I don't expect the deer to be there until much later, but I also just want to make dang sure that I don't screw anything up, because I'm very close. I'm 100, 120 yards from a deer's bed, and if you make any kind of noise out of the ordinary, especially that can kind of be related to or traced back to humans, you're
donezo.
You're going to ride the struggle bus. And with all the effort that I put in from basically January until opening weekend, I want to go in there and have an encounter at the very least. If I screw it up, I want to screw up a shot or, you know, have a doe get downwind of me and blow. I don't want to screw it up while I'm doing the thing that I can control, which is go up the tree quietly and slowly and not make mistakes there, if that makes sense.
I think it's like one of the understated parts of, you know, I've had this conversation a couple of times with different people, and it's, you know, when you're turkey hunting, I'll get to this part later, but like when you're turkey hunting in the spring, you ever notice how many deer you sneak up on?
Oh, dude.
They don't know you're there. And it's not because they're not expecting like humans there. It's because you're taking your time and you're being slow and silent. If you do that same thing in the deer woods, and I don't know why people don't. I guess it's just like the excitement of, I want to get to my tree, I want to get up it, and you know, the deer are gonna pour down the hill before I can be there. It's like if you're slow and silent and you make your approach the same way that you would is in the turkey woods, like you're going to be in such a much better position during the deer season than you ever thought you would be.
Well, I think we respect the turkeys two senses, you know, the ears and the eyes, way more than we do the deer. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot less going on with turkeys. I mean, let's face it, that's, you know, it's spring. It's generally pretty wet. There's, you know, all the leaves that have fallen, they're matted down. A lot of times they're wet. You're walking down logging roads instead of, you know, places that are louder, basically. But yeah. But I do agree with you. You're just kind of on a different level as far as trying to be quiet as hell and deliberate with your movement. And the thing that I think, I've talked with Josh, Jake, all kinds of people, I think they all agree, probably the most overlooked thing out there is access. Like people, mm-hmm. people don't understand that these little suckers are literally betting to catch your ass trying to sneak up on them. Like they're betting and putting themselves in position to watch you from a decent bit away. And so access to me though starts when you get out of the truck. Mm-hmm. Like when your hand is on the handle, and it ends when your bow is hung up. And in my case, mm-hmm. my camera is hung up. Like, and then once I get all that and I feel like I've done a great job, man, the confidence level goes pretty high at that point. And then at that point, I'm just hoping an early doe doesn't come down and start blowing. And I'm waiting on the thermal switch. And once the thermal switch happens, my bow is in my hand, my camera's on, and I pretty much am convinced. I have the dumbest confidence in the world, but I'm basically convinced. You couldn't convince me that those deer, that buck that I'm after, isn't coming down the hill and on his way to get shot.
Hey everybody, Rick here from Fueled by the Outdoors, and I'm here to tell you about a wonderful company, Satties. Custom Ammunition and Gunworks. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads lately. I've been using the Satties Fatties turkey loads, and I gotta tell you, they stop a bird dead. Chris used a 20 gauge this year, I used a 12, Josh used a 20, and my son actually killed one with a 410 this year with one of the Satties loads, and my God, do they put the birds down like crazy. Aaron Satterfield and his family have a wide-ranging array of ammunition, custom game loads, predator loads, turkey loads, the Satties Fatty, and also they do gun work. Please get a hold of them with any questions that you have in terms of your custom ammunition needs. Go to SattiesLLC.com. That's SattiesLLC.com and tell them that Rick from Fueled by the Outdoors sent you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, exactly. And, you know, the access part is so important because deer want to stay alive a hell of a lot more than you want to kill them.
Yeah, it's not tag. It's like you don't get exactly. to play again.
it's like once it's over, it's over. And, yeah. And you know, they are on high alert all the time. And, you know, depending upon where you hunt, obviously it's a hell of a lot different. You know, we're talking, you know, Midwestern to Southern whitetails that have, you know, the only natural predators for a lot of them are coyotes or bobcats or things like that. We're not talking wolves. We're not talking mountain lions. Well, I take that back. In Arkansas, like you get a wanderer every once in a while. In Florida too. If you want to see something really cool, this is a side note. If you want to see something really cool, go online and type up Florida Panther Deer Study and see how many, when people say how little Florida Panthers are, like, oh, there's not that many. There's a ton. There is a good bit that are killed. There's a good bit of deer that are killed every year that they have geo collars on by Florida Panthers. Cause something's killing them, and it's not black bears.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that the access part, and this is a hard thing to learn, especially if you grew up in the Midwest and your exposure, well, and hell, even the South, and your exposure to hunting is gun season, where you walk to a blind or you walk to a ladder stand and you get set up. And you're walking through an open field where your scent disperses a hell of a lot differently than it would in the woods or anything like that. It's a difficult thing to kind of get your head around, because you're going to want to just do like, well, why can't I just walk in like I normally do? Well, because you're going into a different environment. It's the same thing as why you wear suntan lotion in the desert, not in the Arctic. It's a completely different scenario and a completely different situation than what you would necessarily do. I don't know if you wear suntan lotion in the Arctic or not, if it's hot or whatever. It's not hot, but it could be. You could still get sunburn, I guess. But so we've talked about access. We've talked about getting in and getting out of these places. What in terms from your guys' perspective, what in terms of camera placement do you feel is an important piece of information that people miss?
Hold on. Before we move on to that, can I talk about my spot?
Yep.
You can do anything you want, Josh. It's your world.
The spot I mentioned.
We're just rolling in it.
So the spots you were talking about, Chris, I would only hunt in the evenings. Now, I was e-scouting a little bit of Indiana the other day, looking for same terrain type, same features for same early season predominant winds, but I found a spot that I would probably hunt in the mornings rather than the evenings, because looking at these points that set up for southerly based winds or westerly based winds, the ag is actually would be south or west of them, so these deer would, in my mind, they would come off the ag fields going to bed, wind to back. That way, when they bed, they're wind to back looking down in these hubs, but the ag's behind them. So my thought is I could come from the north through the hub and pop up near bed. I would try and anticipate a J hook back up into their bed after they come back from the ag.
So wait, essentially, are you reversing the process basically to where when we're wanting those hubs that we're going to hunt in the evening, they're dumping down into ag at the end of the hub? Yeah. But in this case, they're above the hub in some ag?
Yeah, the ag is above them. You would catch them. So I can't take full credit for this because I heard Alex Chopp talk about this. He talked in, I think, the last In Session podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Damn it, but I missed that.
I believe I heard him say it in person too.
Pretty good.
Like, he likes the ag up top in anticipation that he'll catch the deer coming back to bed in the mornings. I think he's a morning guy, and I'm a morning guy, so I'm like, ooh, that's good. And I actually saw it on the map the other day. I'm like, oh. I was looking for what we were talking about earlier, and then I happened to stumble upon that. I'm like, ooh, that would work in theory, for exactly the situation he said. And it looks harder to access in like a ton of ag to the south. I'm like, it sets up like now it almost looks landlocked. There has to be a spot to access it. I need to find. Sure. But
you just need to buy a helicopter.
I just realized that all of your bucks that you've killed since you've been on the team have been in the morning.
Yes.
Yeah, they have, haven't they?
Yeah. I never thought about that.
No.
Yes.
Since I've been on
all the his team. Bucks up here have been in the morning. Didn't you shoot one in Texas that was in the evening?
So
that one doesn't count.
Yeah,
I'm not. Wasn't a real buck.
Okay.
That buck was like on a Bud Light can or something.
Jesus criminy.
They lured those deer.
That was an evening deer. But I did see that deer in the morning. I've only ever killed, I think, one other. My very first out-of-state trip, which would have been, oh, how long ago was that? 2015, I think. Something like that. Anyway, it was my very first deer I ever killed in Indiana. That was an evening deer. Other than that, they've all been in the mornings.
Interesting.
Let's put it like this. All of my Pope and Young or better deer have been in the mornings.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible.
But I'm also more of a morning hunter. I mean, that's how I grew up, mainly hunting mornings.
Yeah. I used to be. And then I felt like I got smart. But, man, you're making me – I think I have a new tactic for opening morning of every single place I'm going to hunt now. I'm going to
– You could try that tactic in the same terrain, just with a different thought process.
Just and reverse the ag.
Yeah, your other spots, just say for the evening.
Do you know how many places I've found where I'm like, God, look at that hub, but the ag is all above it. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's just not going to work.
Just so you're reversing the tactic, so reverse the time you hunt it.
Yeah.
Good point.
That's incredible. I'm telling you, man, that's why you have buddies who care about hunting. That'll raise the level right there.
That's why he's a doctor and we're not, Chris.
Why? Don't get me started on this damn thing. He just saved his whole week by saying this bit of amazing stuff because I've experienced some special shit this week. So, Rick, would you like to re-ask your question?
Yeah.
Yes, I would love to before I was so eloquently interrupted by Josh because he had to get his information out to us. What do you feel like is a key piece of camera placement that people miss? Trail camera.
That they miss?
Yeah. Like what's a piece of information that you feel like people don't think about when they're placing a trail camera?
A couple things, because I used to think this way. I feel like I remember hearing this on like Midwest Whitetail from like Bill Winky. This was years ago, saying, oh, he's got like one camera every 10 acres and he feels confident he can catch the vast majority of bucks in that area. I find that is very far from the truth, and you actually need a lot more than that to catch what's going on. The other bit of information is I feel like a lot of people are hanging on very obvious things, but you also need to pay attention to the not so obvious or the very faint stuff, because it could provide you with more information than the very obvious stuff.
Yeah, I would say I wouldn't necessarily say what I'm going to say is like a miss, but it's misinterpreted. I think when people find these cattle paths that deer lay down, they get excited, and I'm specimen number one, patient zero, if you will. Like, that was me. And you know what I found on those? Young bucks, babies, and does. Like, every state I've been to, it's the same. Every time I hang cameras on those big, gigantic cutout trails in the banks, it's very rare that I even get a good buck on them.
Right.
And and it is so beyond inconsistent that it's not even worth my time. And again, keep in mind that especially when myself and Josh are talking, Rick's really, I think, kind of jumping on board and coming along with it as well. We're talking about raising your odds very high and being efficient. So I'm not saying that you couldn't go sit there and kill that buck, but I don't want to sit there and kill that buck over 15, 20, 60 sits. I want to kill him opening week, more or less the first couple sits, first sit. Mm-hmm. And my confidence is very high in that first sit, as long as everything's set up the way you need it. You know, there's variables that come into play that can screw you. But so when I'm looking at, you know, for example, the buck I killed last year in Ohio, I had that thing on camera almost every day. I had, you know, the scrape that he was on. I never had nighttime pictures and videos. Think about that. All you people that bait, think about what I just said for a second. I can't buy a nighttime video. They're all in the daylight. I'll never run a damn corn pile again. I don't have to spend my money. I don't have to haul anything because all the corn that I used to be a big, big baiter. They used to call me the damn master baiter on our Facebook page. By the outdoors, for God's sake. I'd have 600, 700, 800 pounds, 1,000 pounds in a corn pile.
Yeah. Should have seen his forearms.
Yeah. But I would carry 150 pounds at a time, and it was not fun. Costs a lot of money, a lot of time. Well, now you get these scrapes, you just put your camera on them and leave and then come back. And then you have all this information, and it blows your mind. So that's
something that's important, because a lot of guys or gals will wait until the fall to put a camera on a scrape. Cool. And if there's anything that I've learned over the past year, is that you can find scrapes during the course of early season. And if you do, and it's a good one, and the ground's tore up, and you know there's a big, like there's bigger bucks in the area or things along those lines, put a camera on that. Something that this is more the holistic view of everything, like kind of combining everything that you guys have talked about, and you know, things that Jake has said, things that Alex has said, things that like a bunch of different individuals said, is like when you look at the holistic view of it, and when you look at like an area like where you have a bunch of beds, buck beds, doe beds, whatever, but you keep like backtracking and you bring it down to a point. Finding where the intersection of the trails of the buck beds kind of come down at, and putting a camera there, not the cattle path, but the slider trails. So the deer that I had the encounter with 2 years ago on public, when I went hunting with you, Josh,
opening day,
that deer came up a path that looked like maybe I had walked back and forth to my archery target like multiple times. It was slight. It wasn't burrowed through. It wasn't anything like that. And it was a very light trail, but had we went back and had we looked like farther on down, you know, there's multiple beds in that area and they all kind of intersect and went out into a field at that point. You lose the trail at the field, but I would be willing to bet if you went back and hung during at least that season, had we hung a camera in that area, we probably would have had a better idea of buck movement during that time.
Yeah. Well, that goes back to what I said, like, don't always hang it on the obvious, hanging on the faint stuff too. I'll put a caveat to what Chris said. I like to use cameras for pure educational purposes, even if I don't plan on hunting an area. If I want to like, oh, how do deer move in this area? I think they move like this. Let's put a camera up and see if my thought process is actually correct or if it's not correct. With those beat down trails, let's say you're in hill country and you're seeing these beat down trails. Personally, I would still put a camera on the beat down trail, but then I would also find the faint sign where I think a buck is coming down. for a couple of different reasons. The one main one that pops up in my head is I want to know when those the does and the babies are coming down. Like, how much earlier is that than the buck? Right? Because if it's not far and you still got to set up relatively close to where those does are coming down, then you're going to have to be mindful of when they're coming down, how often, how close they are. So I think it's just a good educational point. I'm not saying you're going to find the bucks there. I'm just saying it may better inform you of the situation.
Absolutely.
Well said.
I am running way behind on my cameras. I have yet to put them out at my number one spot. I still have cameras out from last year that I need to pick up.
If you're like Tyler Westell, you just lose cameras and you don't even remember where the hell you put them at. What do you say? You lost five cameras last year?
Yeah, got that welder money, man.
I don't even know where I put them.
Good Lord.
I need to. Yeah, my goal this week is to actually get 10 cameras ready and then deploy them hopefully this weekend. That's the goal. I just need. So I'm after a particular deer this year, and I need to really. I have a pretty good idea of his area. I just need to understand better of how he's using it frequently. There's a lot of nooks and crannies that he can kind of hide and use the terrain to his advantage. So I just need to figure out how he's using it and when I can get out there. I have a good idea of how I'm going to access it. At least in my head I do. That's different than what I've done in the past. I'm going to try and use some cameras to confirm.
So I have a serious question about the deer, because I think I know the one you're talking about. Do you, and this is like all things considered, that deer, do you want it hard-horned or do you want it in velvet?
Oh, I would love that thing in velvet. He can look even
just making sure. Just making sure.
I mean, and he looked like a, I mean, he is a giant, but
he's a giant, Josh. Like there's
in velvet last year, he looked
enormous.
Ginormous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when he was walking away in that one video, I was like, oh my God. But yeah, that's a situation where that deer is older, and like you hear a lot of people talk about, as some of these deer get older, their core range shrinks, and then they kind of become homebodies, and they're kind of difficult to push out. And I think that's the situation I'm running into. So I'm going to use cameras. I did some postseason scouting and found a couple newer like scrapes and some licking branches where I think it's closer to this deer's like core that I'll probably hang some cameras on. That's kind of what I have been doing, I guess, the past couple of years to gain inventory, looking for scrapes, looking for licking branches, and not just like any scrape or licking branch. It's got to be in like the right location, near some bedding, near some cover where these deer are going to feel safe to move in daylight. A lot of these ones that are used frequently, they may not be pawed at, but there's like, you'll see like the grass indentation where it looks like deer have stood. The ones that are worn out and bare, but they're not pawed, you know the deer are just standing there for a while. And you'll notice the licking branches have been worked.
Yeah.
Looking for that stuff. And then travel routes to and from, bedding to food and different stuff like that.
You know, it's interesting. Like people say, you hear people talk about like big deer are weird, or big deer like are different than other deer. When you really think about it, like if you're dealing with like a 6 or 7 year old deer, it's like how different is it from like an old person? Like you like staying where you know, you don't want to go out around a bunch of other things. You want to stay in a certain area because you know that it's safe, and you've made all your bad decisions as a youth, and you don't need to go make those bad decisions again.
I mean, yep. I feel like it's like a 40 or 50 year old guy.
Yeah.
Basically, like they're not.
Not in the midlife crisis, though.
What's that?
Not in the middle of a midlife crisis, though.
Yeah. Well, right. I feel like they're basically, you know, king dick, and they've been around the block, so they definitely they know how to stay alive. They've figured it out. And man, it makes them tough in one sense. And then, of course, you know, not so to, well, really, I just think it's sort of an arrogance or whatever that you just kind of exploit a weakness. And, but you have to be really in tune with what's going on at all times to make that happen. Like it's not super easy. One thing that I'm a firm believer in, like when I'm in a tree and I feel that thermal pull, oftentimes I'll be like, all right, he probably just stood up out of his bed and now he's probably going to take a crap, pee, you know, whatever, and then probably going to start moseying his way this way. So it's time to slowly start getting ready and scanning, and man, it's worked.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, we've been at it for about an hour already.
Yeah.
Anything else you guys want to hit on?
I think that's mainly just with regards to, you know, what we were discussing earlier is best to kind of just hit on is, you know, if you're, you know, we talked about trail cams, we talked about identifying beds, we've talked about beds specific to certain winds especially, and just getting out. I think that's the biggest piece. So I'll ask the famed question at this point. What is your, no, I got a different question. I've got a different question.
Okay.
I was not
briefed on this before the podcast.
You were not, neither was Josh. what is one thing that you did wrong last season that you're going to improve upon this season?
Oh, I got it.
Go.
Josh is like, this is a layup question.
I pigeonholed myself in Ohio. I put all my eggs in one basket, mainly because I was having a child in
November. Theo.
Yep. A child named Theo. But I pigeonholed myself. I put all my eggs in one basket because I had been successful 3 years in a row. Sorry, I was counting the deer on my wall. So this year, my goal is to not do that and scout multiple places. So I have places to fall back on.
Yeah, I'm pretty much perfect. So now, well, mine's actually easier than Josh's.
Oh.
I mean, I have like the easiest thing to work on, but probably the toughest thing to execute. If you've followed us for any length of time, especially over the last deer season and this turkey season, you know that Chris, my name is basically a holiday, Christmas. So I have to do everything amazingly and then blow the part that's supposed to not be so hard. So this year I'm going to work my butt off at what I used to be really good at. And I'm going to execute my shots better and not miss. This year, if I make my two shots right off the roost in Kentucky, I kill 4 birds in 5 sits. If I do not miss that deer in Indiana last fall, I have 3 bucks in 2 does across 3 states in 8 sits. So I really screwed the pooch, and I think I ended up sitting Indiana, I think it was like another 7 or 8 times. Something
like over the course of like a month and a half or 2 months, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
There was that one day where you had that horrific snow.
Oh, dude, that was the opener of rifle season. So,
yeah.
Which, you know, I go in there and I get on these deer and it's just phenomenal. I don't see or hear another human being.
I'm like, well, next week's rifle season, I'll get in here early, and this is going to be a layup. You know, I'll have a 350 Legend. Dude, I didn't even see a deer. And it was pretty rough. And we're talking like peak of the rut, man. I thought for sure. But there again, you know, this is where things can really hinder you. You know, you can be as prepared as you want. You have something weird happen with the weather. Like people, I spent years being the hero and going out in every kind of weather. If I don't have a certain wind speed and things are relatively calm, I have no interest in wasting my time. And that snowstorm proved everything. Everybody's like, oh yeah, the snowstorm, it's got them up and moving. Yeah, sure. In the evening when you have beautiful ag to sit over, maybe, and that's a maybe, but that's also like a January thing when they don't have a lot of food, when they still got plenty of white oaks and red oaks on the ground.
They don't care to move.
No, they don't need to move. It's not been, you know, 10 degrees. It's been 50. And in that case, I want to say it was like in the 70s or 80s.
It was in the 70s the week before.
Yeah, that's when we had that crazy warm up. And I think it actually got up into the like the 80s or something. So I remember everybody crying on the internet. But that's where, you know, that snowstorm, people get excited about snow. Those deer hunkered the hell down and didn't move. And I could see for forever. And I didn't even see a damn doe, little fawn, nothing. No little stupid bucks. So, which middle of November in Indiana, you should at least see a damn yearling buck cruising somewhere. Didn't see anything. So you got to make them count when you can. And Chris is going to have to pull his string and start learning how to shoot things the first time and stop making this shit so interesting.
I think mine is the one thing I did not do enough of last year was, this is a very basic fault on my end. I had not shot a buck with my compound in quite some time, and I shot that deer in Ohio in October. And I let myself relax, and I really thought, like, oh, I'll have plenty of other time to go hunt. I did not make time to hunt as much as I should have in Kentucky, and I, you know, ate tag soup. I didn't make time to hunt does in Ohio like I would normally do. But the larger aspect, if I look at it, is boots on the ground scouting. I did not do enough of that last year, and I know, I've tried to at least three times this year, and it just hasn't happened yet. Hopefully this weekend, I'll get out and scout a piece of public that we've all talked about, and I hope to go hang some cameras there and in a different, little bit different area than where we necessarily wouldn't naturally be looking, and seeing if something doesn't pop up there instead of where everyone else may be going. So that's the thing I want to correct.
Oh yeah, man. All right. Well, you want to close us out?
Yeah. Everyone, this has been Fueled by the Outdoors. We've been your hosts, Rick Gates, Chris Leppert, and Josh Luck. Thanks for sitting and listening with us, or letting us talk at you for the past hour. And we will talk at you next time. Bye.
See you.
See you guys.